ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय All stuffy in here? Is it a little stuffy and warm in here? Fans should run. There we go. Just don't run the one over me. I can't take it. Is that better? Is that okay? Nama Adhyaya Bijaya Gana Vijnana Murtaye Pranendriya Mano Buddhi Vikarayar Vyaktamiyushe Nama Adhyaya Bijaya Jnana Vijnana Murtaye Pranendriya Mano Buddhi Vikarayar Vyaktimiyushe Someone else. Namo Ajaya Bijaya Jnana Vijnana Murtaye Pranendriya Mano Buddhi I offer my obeisances to the original personality within this universe, Lord Brahma, who is cognizant and who can apply his mind and realized intelligence in creating this cosmic manifestation. It is because of his activities that everything within the universe is visible. He is therefore the cause of all manifestations. Purport. The Vedanta Sutra begins by declaring that the Absolute Person is the original source of all creation. Janmad yasya yataha. One may ask whether Lord Brahma is the Supreme Absolute Person. No. The Supreme Absolute Person is Krishna. Brahma receives his mind, intelligence, and materials, and everything else from Krishna, and then he becomes the secondary creator, the engineer of this universe. In this regard, we may note that the creation does not take place accidentally because of the explosion of a chunk. Such nonsensical theories are not accepted by Vedic students. The first created living being is Brahma, who is endowed with perfect knowledge and intelligence by the Lord. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. Although Brahma is the first created being, he is not independent, for he receives help from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his heart. There is no one but Brahma at the time of creation, and therefore he receives his intelligence directly from the Lord through the heart. This has been discussed in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Lord Brahma, Hiranyakashipu, continues to offer his prayers to Lord Brahma as though Lord Brahma were the supreme original personality of Godhead. Nard Muni was under a similar impression, we learn in the second canto, but he intelligently asked Lord Brahma, it seems that you're the original person in the universe, but then we observe that you appear to be worshiping somebody else. So does that mean there's someone superior to you? And Lord Brahma was very pleased. Yes, my dear boy, I'm just the secondary creator. But the real creator, original creator, is the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, Krishna. So in this way, Narad Muni got the correct understanding by inquiring submissively from the qualified authority, from Lord Brahma himself. Hiranyakashipu doesn't do that. He just accepts or comes out with this statement that you're the supreme person, Adhyaya, you're the original. Namo Purusham Twadyam, you're the original person, the seed of the entire cosmic manifestation, Bijaya. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, Bijam Mam Sarvabhutanam, Vidhi Partha Sanatana. I'm the eternal seed of everything. So here, Hiranyakashipu accepts Lord Brahma that way. And Jnana Vijnana Murtaye, you are the personification of Jnana and Vijnana, theoretical knowledge and its practical application. Because everything in the creation comes about pranendriya mano buddhi vikarai, as a transformation of the work of your intelligence, mind, senses, and living force. The comment Srila Prabhupada offers is that the creation doesn't take place accidentally. He disparages what he calls the chunk theory. That in the beginning was the chunk. And the same theory is stated, of course, Srila Prabhupada has that disparaging term for it. I'm sure they've got some Latin polysyllable that expresses it more elegantly. But the same idea, that in the beginning there's matter of some sort or other. And somehow or other, matter does something. And from matter, everything then comes out in a wonderfully orderly fashion. That's their theory. Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahuranishvanam aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kamahaitakam. This is the demonic theory, that everything takes place just by the interaction of material elements, material forces. Kaviraj Goswami calls this the logic of the nipples on the goat's neck. You've seen how the goats, and although this is Bombay, still we've seen goats. Huh? They sometimes have nipples hanging from their necks, but if you try to get milk out of them, it's not going to happen. So matter is like that. It appears as though it might be the source of everything. But matter on its own has no volition. It has no intelligence. Here are the necessary items. Buddhi, intelligent design, mana, thinking, indriya, craftsmanship performed with the senses, and prana, living force. We see this practically. Take this seat. It's a transformation of intelligence, mental energy, proper application of the senses, and some vitality. All of those were required to build such a simple thing as this seat. Even the, you know, this is quite a fancy one, but even the plastic ones out in the hall were built by the same process. Or even if it were just a mat, you know, a straw mat, that also requires intelligence, vital energy. All of these things are needed, even to make a simple straw mat. But we're supposed to accept the theory that for the creation of the universe with all of its wonderful systems, even the non-biological ones, that's the next story that, you know, the matter decided that wouldn't it be nice to be alive? So it matter said, let there be life, and there was life. But even just for the development of the material systems, the planetary orbits, little items like the law of gravitation, the laws of all of them, everything that has to do with thermodynamics and this and that, it all just boom popped into being because it was somehow or other anything could have happened. And this just happens to be what happened. Now, isn't that a satisfying explanation? But that's what the demons have offered us, that there's so many possibilities. So this is also a possibility, and out of the unlimited number of possibilities, this just happens to be the one that happened. And that's that. And as Prabhupada used to say, and we're supposed to believe it. So we don't believe it. Prabhupada said these theories are not accepted by Vedic students. Rather, the original person is Krishna, who has intelligence and everything required. And being supremely intelligent, he doesn't do all the work himself. He creates somebody else to do it. This is intelligent, even in ordinary affairs. Why should we have to work? We'll get somebody else to do it. In Krishna's case, there wasn't anyone else to do it, so he created someone. That's Brahma. And there was no one to instruct Brahma other than the Lord himself. So the Lord did that. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaviye. He gave inspiration within the heart. So that Brahma would know what to do. And Brahma does the needful. Lord Brahma is described in this verse as the original cause of the cosmic manifestation. And this applies to his position in the material world. There are many, many such controllers, all of whom are created by the Supreme Lord Vishnu. This is illustrated by an incident described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. When the Brahma of this particular universe was invited by Krishna to Dwarka, he thought that he was the only Brahma. Therefore, when Krishna inquired from his servant which Brahma was at the door to visit, Lord Brahma was surprised. He replied that, of course, Lord Brahma, the father of the four Kumaras, was waiting at the door. Later, Lord Brahma asked Krishna why he had inquired which Brahma had come. He was then informed that there are millions of other Brahmas because there are millions of universes. Krishna then called all the Brahmas who immediately came to visit him. The Chaturmukha Brahma, the four-headed Brahma of this universe, thought himself a very insignificant creature in the presence of so many Brahmas with so many heads. Thus, although there is a Brahma who is the engineer of each universe, Krishna is the original source of all of them. In the Brahma Sangita, Jagadandanata, plural, there are so many Jagadandanatas. Jagadanda means the egg-like universe covered with its shell. Jagadanda, and Jagadandanata. There are so many lords because there are so many universes. Each one has its own Brahma. But Krishna, Govinda, is the origin of all of the Brahmas, the sub-creators of the universe. All right, some questions?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, in the here Hiranyakashipu seems to be offering prayers to Lord Brahma as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in the previous chapters we find he knows that Vishnu is the Supreme, and if he destroy Brahmanas and others who are like watering the root, then automatically the whole tree will dry up. So, are the prayers of Hiranyakashipu just flattery, or is he convinced of this fact?
Well, I raised that possibility yesterday, that it could be flattery, but I'm not offering that as a conclusive statement because it's not based on any Acharya's commentary. It's just a thought that occurred to me. But it could be, just like we find in third canto that Kashyap Muni is glorifying his wife, that you're the queen of the home, and everyone, no one could, even in millions and millions of lifetimes, no one could possibly pay his debt to such a wife as you, and you protect the fortress of a man's life from all the attackers that might come from the illusory energy, and you're so wonderful. And so the Acharyas have commented that he's either joking or flattering. So one suspects, without being sure, that the Hiranyakashipu may be flattering Lord Brahma, because after all, he has a motive. There's a motive there. The Hiranyakashipu is not a pure devotee of Lord Brahma. He's mudlubby. He wants to get something. So one suspects that there may be some such thing behind it. Otherwise, sometimes we know 1 minute and we deny the next moment. You know, we know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but we're going to kill him. It's confusion. That's the sign of the modes of passion and ignorance, that one is confused or backwards in one's intelligence. We see that all the time, that people, they've got their facts straight, but they're confused. You know, the facts are all there, and from those facts, they get totally warped understanding because their minds are warped. So you get someone like Hiranyakashipu saying that Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but we're going to kill him. So that's not possible. Any more than it's possible for Hiranyakashipu to live forever. But in his reality, the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead can be killed, and he himself can live forever. So he's really screwed up. That's essentially the problem. Is that okay? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. These days there's so much of technological change happening, and we see that when we explain technology to people and their light bulb kind of lights up, is, oh, you know, wow, this is the reason why this works. But if we use a similar process to explain to them about spiritual life, not only to them, even to us, it's explained to us so many times, but the light bulb doesn't light up. So for technology, it seems so easy. You know, when you realize this is how it works, this is how internet banking works, so, you know, you follow the steps and it works and you say, wow. But for spiritual technology, it doesn't light up the same way in spite of the number of instructions we receive.
I was discussing this with Niranjan Maharaj last night. To understand spiritual technology requires something more than just ordinary intelligence. It requires spiritual credit. If one is deficient in spiritual credit, even though he may be very intelligent, he just can't get it. Yesham tantukatam papam jananam punyakarmana te dvandva moha nirmukta. Who can be freed from duality and illusion? The persons who have come to the end of sinful activities. Antukatam papam. And jananam punyakarmanam, who perform many, many pious activities. Te dvandva moha nirmukta. They can be freed from duality and illusion. The implication is that that the rest can't be. That those who are too addicted to sinful activities, those who are deficient in spiritual credit, can't be freed from illusion and duality. And therefore, they don't, bhajante mam jatavrata, they can never get the determination to serve Krishna, because they haven't even gotten to the first, why serve Krishna when I'm this body and life is meant for sense gratification? So they haven't even reached, as we say in America, they haven't reached first base. They haven't gotten to the first point. That spiritual credit is there, and Niranjan Maharaj was quoting from Bhakti Tattva Viveka of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he essentially says that a person has to become a little, if he's fortunate, then when his material position is smashed, or when his material position is successful, and he sees that it's useless, then he becomes inclined towards spiritual realization. But it depends on spiritual credit. Otherwise, the person who's materially, who's sinful and unfortunate, under the same circumstances that would make a fortunate person Krishna conscious, he becomes doubly convinced that spiritual life is fantasy, that it's sentimental, that it doesn't make any sense at all, that it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, on and on he goes. That's the problem, deficiency of spiritual credit. Therefore, we invite people to chant Hare Krishna, to take prasadam, to associate with devotees, so that they can get spiritual credit. And, in fact, a lot of spiritual credit, because the normal system of Vedic sacrifices, dana, yajna, and so on, that's for building up your spiritual credit, but it's too slow in Kali Yuga. You don't build up, by the time you build up your bank balance, you're dead. So you never get to buy anything. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving wealth abundantly. So if someone chants Hare Krishna, take some prasadam and association of devotees, very quickly he can get a lot of spiritual credit. Then, if he's still performing sinful activities, he may become receptive to the advice that, no, you give up these, you follow these four regulative principles, your life will be better. Then he can get free from duality and illusion and become serious about Krishna consciousness. Okay. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. We often hear lectures from great gurus, Maharaj. So a lot of Maharaj do speak about this world is a materialistic world. It's you people are here just for sense gratification, getting into a lot of unwanted things, intoxicants. So I just want to know why this world was created in the first place. Secondly, there are people who still live in this world, not aware of the spiritual life, but still they are happy. They're earning, the people who are in the software industry, earning a lot of big money, big package coming to their pockets. They're very happy. They buy bungalows, cars, all the metal things, but still they're happy. They never complain about that. But so sometimes I find it very contradicting. So what is real, actually? What is real? Is it spiritual or it's materialistic?
Okay, let's take, you've got two questions there. Let's take the first one. Why is this world created? It's created because we want it. The spiritual world is fine. It's really good. It's, you can live as long as unlimitedly. You can be free from all miseries. You can enjoy loving relationships unimpeded by any circumstance. You have all these. You can have any kind of body that you want. Assume any form that you want. You can live in the nicest sort of places. I mean, Goloka Vrindavan, to live in a place like Vrindavan Forest, I mean, you know, you have to pay crores to get a little box in Bombay in the middle of all the smog and honking horns and all of that. So how much is real estate worth in the spiritual world? And you can live there and not have to pay anything, unlimitedly. So it's the better place. The only problem with it is that you can't be the center of everything. That's the big drawback of the spiritual world. He's the center of everything, and you're just a servant. That, of course, is intolerable. We're not going to put up with that. So we're going to find someplace else where we can be in the center. And so here we are. We are in the center. Of course, we're fighting with everybody else who's also in the center. And we have a few miseries to put up with, like a long list of them, which we won't go in depth into the catalog. You know, we had a nice festival last night. We don't want to depress everyone. But there's lots and lots of abundant miseries. And for the privilege of living in this miserable place, and you have to work like a dog. And at the end, as your reward, you get to die. So, therefore, it's described in Bhagavad Gita as dukkhalayam ashashvatam, a miserable place. And even if you say, no, it's not miserable, I like it here, well, too bad. You get kicked out and have to go to a whole different scene. So, dukkhalayam ashashvatam. But it's here because we want it. We insist, no, I have to have some place where I can be in the center. All right, here, take it. Then, as far as all those happy, happy people in the software industry, they're friends with someone who's in an even softer position, namely the hog. The hog is also in some sort of soft, very soft industry. And they also, when you see them, they also have those big smiles on their faces. And they're also eating exceedingly well. And the big payoff that you can get in the software industry, that now that you're such a big shot and you have this and this and this and this, then you're sexually attractive. Well, the hog was there first. So how are they different from the hog? The hog is getting pleasure by eating, sleeping, mating, and defending himself. And your software giants are in the same fortunate position that they can enjoy sense gratification. So how are they different? That I'm just running like a little hog on four legs and you're running like a big man on four wheels. But what's the difference? What are you running after? Well, actually the same thing. You know, he's driving to a big restaurant and he's running to the stool. But it's the same business. So how are they better? But by the avaranatmika shakti, the covering potency of maya, whatever situation one is in, one thinks, this is great. Apart from that, I can guarantee you there are so many wealthy, successful, so on, people in the software industry or any other industry who are miserable and who know that they're miserable. And because they're so wealthy, they can afford to have top-class psychiatrists and take whatever drugs he prescribes, or skip the psychiatrist and just take some other kind of drugs. You know, we look at the software guys and think, oh, they must be in heaven. But even if you look at heaven, they have problems. You go to Indraloka, where it seems that they live forever and they have wonderful sense gratification, but they also have problems. They also are in anxiety about death. They're also in anxiety about losing their post. They also are attacked by hostile takeover attempts. You know, the demons come and try to take over and sometimes even succeed and drive them out of heaven. So even if you go to the higher planets, the much advertised happiness is not actually to be found. Mamupecha tukontia punarjanmanabhidyate. But if one goes back to Godhead, then there's no birth and death, no disease and old age, and there's actually happy life. Otherwise, there's the illusion of happiness or the pretense of happiness. You have your choice of the two. It's either the illusion of happiness, he's such a fool that he thinks that this is happy, or it's the pretense of happiness. He knows he's not happy, but he's going to put up a good show. Something else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I just wanted to know that the demigods, they are higher beings. And how are they affected when yajna is not performed on earth? We read in the same canto.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. How are they affected when yajna is not performed on earth? We read in Bhagavad Gita that the paraspara bhavayanta, that there's a relationship between the activities performed on earth and the satisfaction of the demigods in heaven. And in Brihad Bhagavatamrita we read that when the sacrifices are not going on, then the demigods are in hunger. You know, they've got a problem. You know, you may be just like a big jamindar or something, but if nobody's paying their rent, so these indications are there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Even being a demigod, you know, you can't win anywhere. Might as well surrender. Is that all right? Something else? Yes.
Maharaj, are devotees in North America involved in the debate of the intelligent design?
Are devotees in North America involved in the debate about intelligent design? Not very much, but We have devotees in Europe who are quite involved in that. There's one devotee who's quite well networked with the intelligent design community. And from the work that he's doing, the BBT is planning a book about intelligent design with Krishna conscious conclusions to celebrate the whatever it is anniversary of Darwin's auspicious janma. Is that okay? Is an answer? You're not switched on. It's on, but not.
Maybe it's not so close.
There we are.
The debate that's going on in the schools, whether to teach Darwin's theory is that because of there is no separation of church and state in America? Is that the main hindrance, or like?
There's no separation of church and state in America. You mean the opposite?
Yeah, opposite. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I haven't been regularly reading my law review, but there's a battle going on. There are those who want to make room for alternative views, and then there are those who are holding the fort and saying no. There was a major setback for the intelligent design people from one court decision. But it's not over. That's, you know, without following the courts very closely, I couldn't tell you much more than that. But it's right now, I suppose we'd have to say that the materialists are in the dominant position. The materialists are in the dominant position, and this stuff about intelligent design is just religion in disguise. Whereas we want science. And people are not quite sharp enough to detect, for the most part, that as religion has its presuppositions, which are not subject to proof, so does science. It's not that science just starts with a blank slate and then starts building up from facts. You must have presuppositions that you bring to the enterprise. And they do. They do. But people don't see that. So that makes, in one sense, religion and science on an equal footing. Another way that they're on an equal footing is that in religion there are so many things that you have to accept on faith, and in science there are so many things that you have to accept on faith. Like Darwin's theory. So many aspects of it are not demonstrated. The evolution of life from chemicals really requires an enormous leap of faith, because no one's ever seen a living being generated by any chemical combination, and the obstacles to it seem to be formidable. But as a matter of faith, we accept that no, life has evolved from chemicals. No one's seen the universe come out of a Big Bang. It's not that we've observed it, what to speak of being able to replicate it. But on faith, we believe that this occurred. So if you think that religion has to do with faith, science has to do with faith. So people don't quite get it a lot of the time. And often the arguments offered for a theistic point of view are clumsy. It's not that the scientists have all the bad arguments. The religious people have a fair amount of bad arguments of their own. So that's problematic. There's a good fight still to be waged.
Do you think that we have really good arguments to put against?
Do I think that we have really good arguments? I do think we have really good arguments.
It needs to be presented.
Excuse me?
It needs to be presented.
Yeah, it needs to be presented. That 3/4 of the problem is that people don't hear your point of view. you know, the demons are very well organized. The materialists are very well organized. They've got publications. They've got television shows. They've got classes. They've got classes for kids. I was telling another time I was here about this little kid's book that put together by a friend of my sister's, where she tells the whole story of the universe in such an entertaining way for kids. And then I decided, wouldn't it be good to be bigger? And so I exploded, and so on. So they're, you know, they're churning out the propaganda, and people hear it and hear it and hear it and hear it. And if they don't hear the other side, then they just accept what they hear. So the as the materialists are active in putting forward their arguments, the theists also need to be very active and very sharp, because scientists are not just stupid. They put together sophisticated demonic arguments. So the theists have to put together, you know, sharp arguments. They have to be able to persuade. So there's a lot of preaching to be done. There was a, well, we're just about out of time. There's a question over on that side. Oh, sorry.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Recently there was a Hindi movie in which there was a popular song with words Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. So
I missed that one.
So, some devotees feel that it's actually good because non-devotees are getting to hear the holy name and they'll get purified. While some devotees feel that actually, for a person to actually change spiritually, he should hear the holy name from a spiritual person, not a Vaishnava. So, what is the correct thing? Will it have benefit or it's useless?
Well, for the actual change to take place, we have to hear the transcendental sound from a transcendental source, then the actual potency will be there. But the one benefit you can say is that people have heard something like the sound, so when they meet you, they may be a little receptive to something. In America, in the 1970s, early 70s, there was some play in which there was chanting of Hare Krishna. It was about the hippies and so on, but there was chanting of Hare Krishna. And so the devotees used to take the opportunity in the evenings to go to that place, and after the play, when people were coming out, the kirtan party would be there chanting Hare Krishna and distributing books about the chanting. So in that way, it provided a little something to step on to launch the parampara sankirtan. Is that okay? Otherwise, no, we wouldn't expect that, you know, if the movie gets real big, there'll be a lot of pure devotees coming out. Yeah, there's a question over, there's one, okay, there's a couple here and then there's one there.
Thank you for the nice class, Maharaj. You know, we hear in the story of Prahlad Maharaj that when Hiranyakashipu left to do austerities, his wife was pregnant, and then he left and he was doing austerities for thousands of years. And then when he came back, then Prahlad Maharaj was only 5 years old. So that's a confusion for me. How is that possible?
Might have been a long pregnancy. Otherwise, what can I tell you?
Was it that maybe Hiranyakashipu was maybe in a lower dimension and she went to...
Yeah, that's the other way of taking it, is to say, well, they were measuring in these units over here and those units over there. That's also possible.
Okay.
If we can't figure out the numbers, will you still chant Hare Krishna? Okay. There was another question on that side?
Maharaj, you quoted the verse, 28th verse from the 7th chapter of Gita, of how one who has acted piously in this life and eradicated sinful activities, then he takes up devotional service with determination. A lot of times within the Grihastha Ashram, devotees aren't aware of the ramifications of not following the regulative principle of illicit sex. So this is kind of indirectly indicates what the reaction will be. Mm. Could you give some more specific directions on what one can expect if he doesn't follow that regulative principle?
Gee. An invitation to catalog all the problems that will result. But the main one is the one you mentioned, that determination, dridhavrata, to become advanced in Krishna consciousness requires endeavor. Just like business, you know, to become advanced in business, you have to put a lot of energy into your business. It's not that you just kind of plod along and business becomes huge. Those who've really put a lot into it may emerge successful. So Krishna consciousness requires determination to become advanced, to hear and chant purely takes a lot of determination. Just to hear and chant at all takes determination. You know, sometimes we don't want to. We don't feel like it. Just to get up every day in the morning and perform spiritual duties, to chant, to hear, to think of Krishna, to read about Krishna and focus our mind, manmana, bhavamadbhakta, madhyaji, mam namaskar, all that requires some determination. And the more you're determined, the more you can serve and the more you can advance. So what happens with breaking regulative principles, it saps our determination. Even in the fourth canto, I believe it's Sanat Kumar who says that even thinking of sense gratification saps our energy. And he gives the example of reeds growing by the side of a pond. You have a pond, there's water in it, but when there are reeds growing by the side, they suck up the water. And so the pond goes dry. So even by thinking of sense gratification, our determination for Krishna consciousness is diminished. Therefore, even that I'm following four regulative principles, I don't do this, I don't do that, I don't have illicit sex, but I'm thinking about it. Even that will bring down my determination, because my mind is divided. I don't have full concentration on Krishna consciousness. I have some concentration there and some distraction there. So then it's not full strength. Like a person in business, if he's really focused on business, shuts out everything else, he's full strength. But if he's kind of doing some business and doing some this and doing some that and doing some this, and then it doesn't go. So if even thinking about sense, therefore that's why brahmacharya means not even thinking about sense gratification. Of course, that's a project, but that's the standard. So if even thinking about sense gratification reduces our determination, reduces our strength, and what to speak of having sense gratification in a manner contrary to regulative principles. How much more will that cut our determination? And practically speaking, what's the result of breaking the regulative principles? You want to keep breaking the regulative principles. You broke it once and it was fun. Well, let's do it again. And then again, and then again, and then again. And then it's, well, you know, why can't I seem to want to, or why can't, you know, then why is it so difficult for us to control our senses in conditioned life? Well, because we didn't follow the instructions of the spiritual master. We thought that we could cheat. And now we're in difficulty. So it's not a problem that's beyond repair if one is serious. But one has to be serious. If one thinks that I can break these principles and still make strong advancement in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada compared it to building a fire and pouring water on it. And depending how much water you pour on it, you know, you're going to sputter or, you know, practically go out. So it matters. It matters. You know, why is one asked to promise these things at the time of initiation? Because it matters. It matters. Mm-hmm.
One other area that seems to be pretty pronounced as a reaction is reduction or almost complete elimination of Brahma Sokhyam Tanantam.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. If you're not getting happiness from your, you know, concentrated spiritual activities, then you're trying to get happiness from your material activities, or a little bit of both, which is, again, gets to be difficult. But those who are trying to get happiness from, well, sex life, unrestricted sex life, apart from the problem that they're now reducing their spiritual happiness, now they're focused on material happiness. And what kind of happiness is that? Yattaragre vishamiva vishyendriya samyogat yattaragre mrtopamam pariname vishamiva Tatsukam rajasam smritam. That's happiness and passion. In the beginning, it's just like nectar. But at the end, it's just like poison. So you had a nice relationship for serving Krishna, but then you started doing these things, and now you have a nice relationship for enjoying sense gratification, but the nature of sense gratification is that it turns bitter. And so you get divorce, you get divorce, or you get constant fighting because I'm not satisfied, you're not satisfied, because there is no satisfaction on the material platform. So that it becomes mundane life. Mundane life. You know, it's not that we're just against it because, you know, they're the other side or something. Mundane life is a life that's full of suffering, a life that's full of trouble, a life that's painful, a life that's excruciatingly problematic. That's what, at the minimum, we want to be saved from. You know, before, what speak of going positively? At least we want to get out of that. So these regulative principles are to save us from that kind of miserable material life. And the more we compromise those regulative principles, the more we extend our entanglement. Okay. In addition to which, if we're that's just this life. What are you doing to your chances for freedom in the next life? That's, we won't even talk about that. Just this life where we mess up. Is that okay? Ooh, too many questions. There was one on this side. We promised. No, this way. Up front, yes. There was a queue.
Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I have this problem that sometimes when I get those ecstatic shots, I intensely pray to Krishna. In the sense, Krishna, I am surrendering my life unto you. Please interfere in my life as you wish. Like Prabhupada used to pray, make me a puppet. Similarly, extreme prayers I used to make when I get some ecstatic shots after kirtan, after wonderful lecture, something like that. But later when Krishna really gives some problems, some entanglements or some miseries, then I find it hard to abide by the prayer. Means, yes, I prayed for that, but no, it's too much, please. So, that sort of problem...
It's too late.
That sort of problem keeps coming and going like sinusoidal. I mean, sometimes up, sometimes down. So please kindly guide me what to pray and how to pray so that we can abide.
It sounds like you can't help it. You know, you just get ecstatic and then you offer these prayers. So even if I advise you not to offer such radical prayers, you know, it might happen anyway. And then Krishna might get really heavy with you and ruin your material life. That would be terrible. Then you might have to go back to Godhead. So I don't think there's any advice I could offer you that would counteract this process.
One more thing. I have heard from some devotees that people are really scared of interference with Krishna. Means, if they even think of this, that Krishna is going to interfere with their life if they are going to pray to Him. He is so much reciprocative. Then they are really fearful. Means, and that I can realize now. Kindly help me. Means, how should I go about it?
Well, I can understand those fears. They're quite justifiable because Krishna is, after all, exceedingly powerful. And second of all, he does these things. So your fears are justified. And on top of that, there's really not much you can do. Because, you know, who are you and who is he? You know, like Hiranyakashipu, there's Nrisimhadev, and, you know, there's Hiranyakashipu like a little mosquito with a sword. You know, so there's not much you can do to protect yourself. Under the circumstances, the best thing is probably just to surrender. How's that?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. What do we do about time here? We're a little over. Do we? Okay. Well, wherever the microphone goes, there's one question here. There's one question there.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Sometimes during when we are engaged in sadhana or service, it's like sometimes you're due to some genuine bodily discomforts, you're not able to do, and sometimes it's your mind that says that don't do it, you're not capable or something like that. But sometimes, so how to really...
So we understand? Have to adjust. One has to be little sane, first of all, and sincere. Just suppose you're working. Sometimes you feel like, maybe I shouldn't go into work today. I'm really feeling sick. But if you're serious about your work, then you think, it's not that serious, let me work. But if you're also sane, when it's really serious, then you stay back from work. And you say, I can barely make it out the door. I might as well, call up and say, I'll be out for a couple of days. Huh? So it's practical. It's just practical management. And on the one side, you don't want to let your mind boss you around and turn trifles into mountains. And we know that even when there's some physical inconvenience, when we're spiritually enlivened and spiritually serious, we can toss a lot of those aside and just keep going. But we also know that there are things that are serious, and that the body, after all, is a machine, and the machinery breaks down, and the machinery needs to be cared for. So just make a sane program. Is that okay?
Thank you, Anand.
That's one of the 26 qualities of a devotee. A devotee is sane. For those who are not sane, life is a little more problematic.
Thank you, Maharaj.
You're saying you'll have no trouble. There's another question, and Mataji there has a question.
Maharaj. It's very nice to have you here. We are very grateful to you. We see that all of our acharyas, the Goswamis, yourself, all the sannyasis, even all our god brothers, all the brahmacharis, they're all self-realized, liberated souls. So is the birth of a woman an inferior birth?
Yes.
And the Srimad Bhagavatam says... at a couple of places that women are less intelligent.
Well, you took a big jump there from the Goswamis to me and all the brahmacharis.
No, I'm sorry.
But since you're taking such a big jump, you might as well include all the women too. And Krishna does that. He says, Striya Shudra Tata Vaisha Tepi Antiparam Gatim. Doesn't matter. Someone is Brahmin, someone is Vaisha, someone is Shudra, someone is woman, someone is... Everyone can go back to Godhead. So then one becomes most intelligent. There are so many intelligent fools who are determined to stay in the material world. So if you become determined to go back to Godhead, serve Krishna and go back to Godhead, then you become the most intelligent. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Yes, over here. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, I want to make a comment also on what Mataji said. I'd heard in this lecture that when there is a mention of women in the scriptures, it's not really relating to the sex woman. It's more relating to the tendency to enjoy in this material world. And that's why even when a man has such a propensity, then he's being woman-like.
Well, there's a place in Srimad Bhagavatam where it talks about women as being a trap and a representative of Maya and so on. And Prabhupada comments that for man, woman is the woman, and for woman, man is the woman. So when Prabhupada says, when the Shastra talks about women, it means women. But then the problem is not women. The problem is men's attachment to women. That's the problem. And then for women, the problem is their attachment to men. Huh? So that's the difficulty. Otherwise, Prabhupada said, my philosophy is that man is good and woman is good. Just that men and women together are not good.
Can I ask my question, Maharaj, which I had in mind? Maharaj, in this pastime of Gundicha, there is a devotee who comes and bathes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet. And then he drinks the remnants and he puts it on his head. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's in the mood of a devotee, you know, he feels very disturbed because it's in the temple of the Lord. And then Srila Prabhupada in the purport, he mentions how, you know, another devotee should not be respected in front of the Lord. And maybe I'm not using the right words, but it kind of goes through my mind when we are paying obeisances to either our spiritual masters or our param gurus in front of the Lord, even though how much I want to give full respect to them. So please, can you give me a higher understanding of this matter, please?
Well, I don't know. Let's see. There is a regulative principle mentioned in Nectar of Devotion that one should not offer respect to others in front of the deity. One should not praise others in front of the deity. And that is a regulative principle. Frankly, it drives me crazy to go to different temples and have people, you know, in front of the deity, you know, just flat out offer obeisances to me, you know, with my big stick and all of that. Even, you know, sometimes they're turning their back toward the deity or turning their feet to the deity to offer respect to a sannyasi. And it's...